Well, hello everyone. Recently I had a Twitter exchange with Stalios from the Lotus Eaters, who challenged me to a debate. He said to actually come into the studio and have a debate where we can, you know, see who has the right ideas, etc., etc. And I had to say to him, I don't want to do a debate. I don't like having debates. Debates are gay, I said, and a waste of time. Let me explain why I think that. And then, once I've explained why I don't like debates in general, especially internet debates, I'll get into some of the concepts that we were disagreeing over. We'll get into the weeds a little bit, okay? First thing, every internet debate I have ever seen has descended very quickly into a contest where two sets of opposing fans, in this case it would be Stelios' fans, and possibly by extension James Lindsay's fans, since he also got involved in this Twitter exchange, and my fans. And they would both declare victory, you know, the utter victory of me, let's say, if it was my fans, and the utter defeat of the vanquished opponent, and then it would be the same, vice versa. And, I mean, that really is nothing to do with any of the ideas at stake. Then, on top of that, even if you ignore what the fans are saying, I have an issue with the whole format of a debate in and of itself, because it becomes a contest not about the actual ideas at stake, not about the concepts that anybody's talking about. Rather, it very quickly descends into a kind of evaluation of debating technique. Sixth form debate club technique. Who has the better comebacks? Who has the better witty repartee? Who gets zingers in there? Who is able to score better points and counterpoints? Okay. These have nothing to do with these kind of rhetorical flourishes, debate techniques, and so on. What you're analysing there is something fundamentally different from what the ideas are. Okay. Much better, in my opinion, to write an essay, or in the case of the closest thing we can get to an essay in the age of online video, is making a video like this. So you can consider this my contribution to the debate, quote unquote. If you're wondering, by the way, today it's an H. Upman Corona Major. Nice light kind of airport cigar, I suppose. But anyway, let's get on to how this started. I'm going to go onto Twitter and I'm going to show you some of the tweets that kind of led to this. Stelios said on Twitter, I am detecting lots of conceptual chaos and confusion with terms like liberalism, post-liberalism, fascism, and woke right. Perhaps I'll soon have to end my Euro-maxing phase, make an omelette by breaking many eggs, and set order in chaos, said Stelios. Well, I quote-tweeted that, and I said, liberalism is whatever our leaders decide today. Post-liberalism is anyone who has stopped believing the lies of liberalism. Fascism just means when the right uses power, and woke right is anyone who doesn't like Israel, who is not a leftist. Glad to be of service, I said. Now, I wasn't trying to dunk on Stelios there. I was simply trying to give an actual definition of what people mean when they use these phrases and labels today. Okay? That is my definition of what is, not what ought to be, not what John Locke wrote in a book 200 years ago, not what my massive stack of F.A. Hayek books say over there. What I'm talking about is the world as it is, the world as it exists right now. I am defining these terms in actu, not in potential or not any in theory or in practice. That is how I'm defining these things, okay? Now, Stelios came back on that, and this is where he challenged me to the debate. He said, "Notice how historical considerations are absent from your account of these concepts, especially liberalism and fascism." And I'd agree. I'd say, well, okay, if you want to consider it historically, liberalism is simply what liberal governments have done. What governments who call themselves liberal have done. So the definition of what liberal is will change over time because the needs of government changes over time. In exactly the same way, I define fascism as what Mussolini did. Mussolini's government was fascist, right? Well, was Mussolini a socialist or a free marketeer? Or actually, he changed his mind. What Mussolini wanted to do changed over time. And fascism was simply how his theorists, how his propagandists, if you want to put it that way, how Mussolini's intellectuals, justified, how they post hoc justified the actions of whatever Mussolini did. In the same way, when Ursula von der Leyen does something, this is, by definition, the action of the liberal. When Tony Blair, if you want to put it that way, when Tony Blair acts, this is liberalism, okay? And however he justifies what he wants to do, and when Fraser Nelson on Twitter or any other liberal defends what Tony Blair wants to do, justifies what he does in the name of liberalism, this is also liberalism. Now, I understand the problem that someone like Stelios is going to have with this, but let's carry on, and I'm going to get into more why I think this. He says, "You are mostly describing how these terms are used by the establishment right now." Yes, absolutely. Because that is the definition that actually matters. That is the one that has purchase. That is the one, when these terms are used, actually used right now, this is what people mean. So I'm just calling a spade a spade. Okay? He says, "Yet the establishment's narrative would not be as strong if people had a better understanding of history." I don't know. I mean, I feel like my tweet where I demystify these terms and just explain exactly what they were also functions to take power away from the establishment narrative. That would be my quick comeback on that. But anyway, he continues. He says, "Including the history of ideas that informs the language of the current dominant narrative." Okay. That's how you get people to offset the negative effect of leftist brainwashing and get them to see things like how ridiculous it is to say that resisting open borders or not transitioning children is fascism, and also get them to see that communism was not of noble intent. Okay, let's carry on. He says, "Terms like post-liberalism and woke right are towards the ends of the phase where they are being introduced as technical terms. My stipulative definition of the latter makes no essential reference to Israel." Well, that's a mistake, for a start. "Contrary to how it was received by some." The thing is, Stelios, anybody who uses the term woke right, by which I mean James Lindsay, Joel Berry, all these sorts of characters, also, many people have noticed, are hardcore Israel fans, and all of the people they apply the label woke right to tend not to be fans of Israel. Is it just by coincidence? It's not. It's a term. When they use the term woke right, what they mean is enemy, not friend. That's what they mean. That's the actual function of the term woke right. Don't listen to those people over there. They're enemies. Listen to us instead. And we're telling you to support Israel. That is the actual function of the term woke right and why it's being rolled out by all of these stooges like James Lindsay. And me saying that cuts to the wick of the matter, doesn't it? Cuts to the wick. Just like when people say fascism, what they actually mean is whenever the right uses power, is called fascism. And things like banning trans kids or not having open borders, when they say fascism, what they mean is enemy. You are our enemy because you want different political ends from us. And I'm just cutting straight to the heart of the matter. When you say woke right, what you mean is enemy. When you call me woke right, what you mean is you're my enemy. Okay? When you call me a fascist, what you mean is enemy. This is just how it functions. Looking at the you're not going to shed any light on the matter by reading Gentili or something, okay? Or going back to the fascist classics of the late 20s. None of that stuff has any relevance whatsoever to how some modern shitlib uses the word fascist. No relevance whatsoever. The only historical relevance it has is that they were the losing side in World War II, and we live in the Boomer Truth regime, of which the ground zero event was World War II. Okay, and the enemy, the loser, the vanquished enemy in World War II were the fascists. That is the only historical relevance to the current term, fascism. So it would be an actual waste of time to go back to the fascist literature, and it would be a waste of time also to go back to even looking at what Mussolini did, which I would say is the most accurate definition of, quote-unquote fascism. Most of the people talking about fascism today don't even know who Mussolini was. They got a vague notion that there was a god bloke with a big chin once called Mussolini. Absolutely no relevance whatsoever. He says, I must admit I've grown accustomed to enjoying our intellectual rivalry. We have the studio and we have people who can moderate. I'm open to debating this with you. And I'll just quickly read my reply and then I'll get back to why I think such a debate would even be a waste of time and why I think me doing this piece to camera sheds more light on the matter. Okay, I said, power doesn't care about history, it only cares about now, and political language is the shell game of power. Diachronic considerations, by diachronic I mean through time, okay? If you want to get to the root of a word, the etymological root of a word, you go back, how did the ancient Greeks mean it? How did the Romans mean it? You go back through that's the diachronic root, okay? Diachronic considerations only enter into consideration as a synchronic function. Synchronic means right now in this moment, okay? If required, history will change, so don't play their game, okay? What I'm saying, in a nutshell, is all of these terms, liberal, post-liberal, fascist, woke right, are merely displays of or attempts to exercise discursive power in the here and now. They're just different ways of saying friend and enemy. Now, we could talk about the history of liberalism, I could talk about Adam Smith and John Locke, and I even wrote a whole book about this once. If you don't believe me, let me go and get it. Hold on. 5 years ago, 6 years ago, I wrote this book, The Defenders of Liberty, Human Nature, Individualism and Property Rights. Bloody hard to get hold of now. And if you go into the last part of this book, the whole last section is all about language games. It's all, in fact, I was saying the same sort of stuff as you're saying, Stelios, right? 5 years ago. Let me just show you. Controlling the frame and winning the language game. Okay? Whole chapter by me in this book, where I talked about George Orwell, and I talked about doublespeak, and the Kafka trap, and linguistic inversion, and the Mott and Bailey, and gaslighting. And I even gave a whole glossary, right? You could probably use this now, if you want to keep on going down this route. I gave a whole glossary of linguistic inversion. What is meant by crisis, what is meant by greed, what is meant by progress, what is meant by terms like here to stay and inevitable and outmoded and social justice and all sorts of things like that. Okay? So I understand exactly what Stelios is saying, being down that road. But now, I feel like I have an even better understanding of what the game is, and how the only way to play the game, if you want, is to do what I've done, which is not to play it at all, not to even fight over the terms, but simply to point out in the starkest possible way what is meant by those terms. When those people use those terms, you need to redefine those terms. In plain English, as to what they mean. Okay? So, liberalism, like I said, is what Ursula von der Leyen wants right now, or what Tony Blair wants. This is a more accurate definition of liberalism than, picking up Herbert Spencer writing in the Victorian period or something. Hardly anybody on earth today has read or cares about Herbert Spencer or what he said. Okay? Hardly anybody even cares about Ludwig von Mises or what he said, or F.A. Hayek or any of these people. Because they're irrelevant. What liberalism is a set of justifications for what the government is doing. And they'll sell it to you in a kind of liberal jacket. Okay? Why do I prefer to focus on this rather than on the history of ideas? Why do I frame things in this way? Why do I insist on looking at what is and what is right now, as opposed to picking up Political Philosophy 101? Well, it's because I like to focus on things as they are and not as they ought to be, because this world is the only one that you can make any changes in, okay? And the trouble when you get into these sorts of things is that you end up in the situation where you're arguing with a communist who tells me that there's never actually been a communist state. There was a communist state in the Soviet Union, the one established by Lenin, the one taken over by Stalin. That was actual Marxist-Leninism. That was the actual putting into effect of communist policies. And the same is true of liberal states. The French Revolution, for example, was the actual putting into practice of Rousseau and other thinkers' ideas in theory. Okay, other states are available, and everybody gets into this game then of saying, well, this was not real socialism, this was not real liberalism, real liberalism's never been tried. Even on the Mises Institute and on every libertarian website I know, They constantly oscillate back and forth between saying real liberalism has never been tried and defending this order as it exists now as an example of capitalism actually working. Okay? But the banner case, I would say, is Coca-Cola. The Coca-Cola Corporation. Is that real liberalism? Is that an example of capitalism working? Is that an example of free markets in action? Well, depending on the argument, depending on the mood of the libertarian that day, it is real capitalism and is proof of free markets working. Okay? Until Coca-Cola does something they don't like. And then it becomes a corporation, cronyism, state-backed monopoly, and all of the other arguments that libertarians come up with to deny corporations' status as real capitalism. Okay? So, depending on their mood, the USA is an example of capitalism working, or it's very far from being a free market state, it's never been a free market state, etc., etc. There's never been a liberal state, there's never been free markets, etc., etc. So, this is a waste of time, isn't it? It's a waste of time to get into that. We're now arguing on the basis of unicorn states that have never existed. The communist utopia or the libertarian utopia that have never existed. What is the point of that? I prefer to look at states as they have actually been. And I look around me in this country, and I look at, in America and across to Europe, and I say, well, this is liberalism. This is the result of liberal policies. Mass immigration, open borders, is the direct result of liberal policies. It is lived liberalism. It is the end result of a worldview that cannot differentiate between different groups of people, that sees, that uses, where is it? Methodological individualism to see human beings as interchangeable and fungible units. So it does not matter if it's me or you or some Chinese guy or some Indian guy or some black dude. Everybody exists as an interchangeable cog. Just a unit. That is the end, and the end state of liberalism therefore breaks down borders. Liberalism is a radical ideology that breaks down borders and eliminates the distinctions between people in the name of a universal order. And my contention has always been, or has been in recent years at the very least, that liberalism, because of this, is totalitarian in nature. It's absolutist. It cannot accept any alternative worldviews without freaking out and without seeking actually to eliminate those alternative worldviews. And if you have a look at what the liberal world order has consistently done, it has sought to destroy all alternative modes of life. Traditional ways of life, communist ways of life, any alternative to the liberal world or fascist ways of life, it has declared total war on any alternative to itself and has sought to bomb, quite literally bomb those places into submission, which it did do in the Second World War to Germany and Japan. And subsequently, the list of countries that quote-unquote liberalism has bombed, tried to bomb into being the same as itself, is quite large, quite a long list. So to me, this is the definition of a totalitarian worldview, which has an, despite the fact that in many other ways liberalism is an attempt, is a desire to try to escape from politics, ironically in practice it becomes the ultimate expression of Schmidt's friend and enemy, where liberalism is so absolute, it can only process all of its opponents as one totalitarian evil. It is pretty much the only worldview that is so intolerant, it must label all of its enemies as evil. Not simply evil, evil to be destroyed and bombed into submission. This is the true nature of liberalism. That's why it tries to turn every single opponent it has into Hitler. Or if you want, into Hitler and Stalin, who are two sides of the same totalitarian coin. This is the ultimate in boomer truth, isn't it? But it doesn't matter what the person believes. If it's not liberalism, they become Hitler or they become Stalin, or both. So Osama bin Laden, for example, also is kind of Hitler. Saddam Hussein was Hitler. Slobodan Milosevic was Hitler. Muhammad Gaddafi was Hitler. The Ayatollah now is Hitler. All of its opponents, any opponent of liberalism, magically becomes Hitler. You all know this as well. This is the kind of waters that we all swim in. So, my real question is, what is the point of playing around with these words? You know what they mean. I've explained at length what they mean. Unless you're trying to rescue them in some way, which I think is actually what Stelios is trying to do. He's trying to rescue liberalism from the disaster that he has witnessed his entire life, namely how things have gone in the West. He's trying to say, well, that isn't real liberalism. What liberalism actually is some other, you know, non-failed outcome that he desires, something like this. Okay. What I'm saying, I guess, is that I just don't accept that. I don't accept that. I think that this is liberalism. And that arguing over things like the size of the state, welfare, tax receipts, all of the typical things that classical liberals, even me, right, talked about at length, are just a waste of time. They're just a waste of time because they don't get us closer to seeing the actual truth of the situation, which is as I've been describing in this entire video. So what I want us to do, if you want, is to get beyond these limiting conceptual horizons of the 20th century, endlessly looking to define and redefine liberalism and fascism and communism and so on. We need to step over all of that. We need to move beyond it and see all of those things for what they are and what they were. I've drawn on James Burnham many times in the past. If you have a look, if you zoom out, look at World War II as being a war fought between three different types of managerial state. All FDR's USA, Stalin's Russia, Hitler's Germany were three managerial states. And all of them, in their various different ways, were quote-unquote absolutist and totalitarian. Just so happened that it was the Allies who won that. But the actual nuts and bolts mechanics of it, they all basically had similar sorts of ways of organising things. They just justified them in slightly different ways. As I've talked about, Stalin's Russia actually sold itself as being democratic. The Soviet Supreme, remember? The Supreme Soviet. But I look at Congress, I look at the history of Congress, and I see very similar mechanics at play. Congress simply rubber stamps that which has already been decided by the Politburo. Who happens to be the chairman of the Presidium of the Supreme Soviet, whether it's Kalinin or some other doofus, doesn't matter, because he's basically executing the will of the permanent deep state. Just like it doesn't really seem to matter who is the president of America, the agenda just is the same no matter what. Even when it seems such a large contrast between Obama and Trump, as an example, the agenda continues regardless. As Brian Beletic has pointed out countless times, you know, the agenda stays the same, and it can be predicted with deadly accuracy by reading the publications of the Politburo, or the Rand Corporation, or whoever it happens to be in America, whichever policy hubs. You know, recently we've seen videos showing how so many kind of political operatives were actually installed by the CIA. Student publications run by the CIA. This is known. Got a book here. Where is it? Who Paid the Piper goes into just how many things the CIA controlled. Many things in America decided by fiat and then carried out. Desegregation is an example. Carried out at gunpoint. Little Rock, 1957. That occurred 8 years before the Civil Rights Act was ever passed. Wasn't voted for. Decided by judicial fiat. And then later, rubber stamped, as it was already decided on by the Politburo. Later, was it rubber stamped by the Supreme Soviet? You understand where I'm going with this? The democracy bit of the American system is as much of a sham as the one in Stalin's Russia. Seems to me. Or, you could put a more positive spin on it, it's as legitimate as the one in Stalin. It was as democratic, as truly democratic, as the one in Stalin's Russia. This was lived communism, right? And lived liberalism, if you want to put it a different way. So, yeah. These are some things to think about. This has got a very deep kind of caramel flavour today. It's a H. Upman Corona Major. Getting deep caramel notes, which I don't usually get in this one. Usually shortbread for an Upman, but interesting. So anyway, yeah, I kind of rambled a little bit here, as I want to do in these video monologues. But yeah, this is the way I am seeing things, okay? And to an extent, it's kind of like, well, what is the point of arguing over specifically what is meant by this term and that term, when in practice we see how things play out? Okay? And I'm much more interested these days in the nuts and bolts mechanics of how these various power structures function and why it is that despite however they justify themselves and whatever they call themselves, we still end up seeing some pretty similar outcomes. So I consider these to be much more interesting questions than quibbling over what exactly is meant by liberalism and fascism. Okay. Let me know what you think in the comments. I stand by my decision not to have this debate. Hopefully I've opened up further questions for Stelios to consider. He can also reply, you know, in the time-honoured fashion. And maybe we can actually get a fruitful back and forth in an exchange like this, where we're not trying to interrupt each other, we're not having that kind of frustrating thing where, oh, I've only got 5 minutes, now you've got 5 minutes, now, oh, you know, all of those things are irritating. We don't have the distraction of you know, people cheerleading from the sidelines and declaring victories and dunking and all that sort of stuff. So I actually think that me talking to this camera for half an hour and then Stelios listening to this, thinking about what he agrees with and disagrees with and coming back, that can actually be fruitful. I actually saw this in practice, to come back to one of the themes, when I had the disagreement on jazz and hip-hop with Andy Edwards. I made a video, Andy Edwards replied, I made a reply to him, and then he replied to me, and we actually came to a kind of a set of agreements. That was a really good dialogue that I had with Andy Edwards, who then we kind of made friends, and we ended up agreeing on more than we disagreed on. This, to me, seems more intellectual, more rigorous, more in the spirit of the internet than the internet blood sports debate-type scenarios. So hopefully Stelios takes this in the right way. I mean, one of the reasons I don't... Another reason is that I kind of like Stelios. I've met him in real life. I don't want to fall out with him, etc. And debates have a habit, even if it's all in good fun and so on, of actually becoming quite acrimonious because of how many eyeballs are on it. And, you know, I've just seen it in practice so many times. And I'd rather not fall out with him. I'd rather not have the kind of whole spectacle of it all, because it is basically like gladiatorial combat, let's face it. And I'm you know, a lover, not a fighter. All right, pick up a course at the academic agency if you're interested in these things, by the way. Foundations of Logic, Foundations of Writing, and the Foundations of Rhetoric, the Trivium. Buy it now. I mean, on this topic, I'd spent a long time in Foundations of Logic talking about the importance of definitions, okay, and how most debates basically never get out of quibbling over the definitions phase. Okay, there are definitions, there are premises, and then there is the validity of the logic, the actual reasoning part. Lots of logic books focus just on the validity, the reasoning part. Okay, if you're lucky, they'll focus on the premises part, but it's the definitions where most arguments are won and lost. It is the definition phase where most confusion arises, and this is a whole debate with Stelios over definitions. So it's kind of, if you're interested in all of this, pick up the Trivium today as well. Hopefully Stelios takes all of this in the spirit it is intended, and I'll catch you soon. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just 3 of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.